Welcome to the Eclectic Gamers Podcast. Today is Sunday, April 14th. This is episode 217. I am Tony.
I am Dennis. I'm tired.
Tony. I'm tired. So much CPs.
Yes. Well, I don't think this is going to be necessarily a particularly long episode, but we do have a couple of interesting news pieces to go over. But anything of note? Anything you've been playing over the last couple of weeks?
I got some stuff for my birthday that I've been playing.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I forgot what I got you. Little game called Time Wasters. You got me a pitcher.
I got you a pitcher?
A pitcher.
Like a water pitcher?
Like a water pitcher.
Okay.
It was on my wish list.
That was nice of me.
It was very nice.
Okay.
I use it every day.
Yay.
I make tea in it or juice or other stuff. It's very nice.
So Time Splitters.
Time Splitters and Deep Rock Galactic Survival are both auto shooters that I got, and I've been playing a lot of those. They're just kind of fun little games I can play while I'm doing other stuff as well. But most of this week I've been reading a lot, been doing for years.
You've always been a prolific reader.
But yeah. And then I Humble Bundle last summer put out a special Humble Bundle special that was the, I said special multiple times. Mm-hmm.
Allow yourself to introduce yourself.
Yes. Their Humble Bundle, they had a BattleTech Humble Bundle that was the original, the first 60 of the original BattleTech novels. So I picked that up and I've been working my way through them. I'm almost to 50. I'm on 48, I think. 48 or 49. But just earlier this week, like Thursday this week, they released a new 70 book set that are the 70 follow-on novels from the original 60. There's a couple other things mixed in. There's some magazines and some short story collections mixed into it. But of the stuff that took place later, like the original 60 were the ones that I grew up with and read. I think they finished in like the very early 2000s. And all of these other ones are the ones that came out later. So they've got the 70. And then they also have a 71 item bundle that's considerably more expensive than the 70 item bundle because the one is the 60 items from the original from the bundle that I bought last year. So I'm not going to get that one, but I'm going to follow up just so I have all of the printed BattleTech fiction in ebook format now, which means I have a lot of reading to go. Here's how crazy it gets. I'm currently listening to on audiobook a new go through of the Aubrey Martin series. Which is Victorian or like Age of Sail.
Is that like Master and Commander?
Yes. Master and Commander, the movie, was based off the Aubrey Martin books.
Based off a few of his books, if I recall.
Yeah, like three of them or four of them were pulled from to make that one.
Okay.
To make that movie.
I've not read the books, but I knew the name.
Yeah. So I've been listening to that on audiobook. On my Kindle, I've been reading all the BattleTech novels. And then on my phone, I've been reading yet another set of novels so that I'm always have something with me no matter where I'm at I can read. So I've been kind of going through, but I've hit the point coming up on 50 BattleTech novels read that I've just had to take a break from BattleTech. It's like, okay, I'm going to start reading something else for right now because I've been reading another series that I picked up a number of years ago and haven't read. I only read like the first three books of the series. I haven't picked up any more of them, but I started rereading those books and they've captured all my attention. So I've been reading them pretty consistently. And then I'm going to segue back into stuff. But yeah, no, I between audiobooks, Kindles, and my phone, I'm currently going through three totally different series of like early 1800s, Age of Sail, Victorian, feudal space stompy robots, and then a very, very space opera, man of action space opera type series is what I've been reading in three separate things so far. So yeah, it's been fun.
Okay. Well, I'm not really reading anything at this particular moment. And I haven't been playing a lot of games. It's because, as you know, it was over the last week in particular, Watches and Wonders 2024, which my other hobby being wristwatches. For those that don't know, just the easiest way to describe it is Watches and Wonders is E3 for watches. But like, they actually do it. Like they avoid all the leaks and stuff. And most of the Swatch Group is probably the biggest luxury conglomerate that does not participate in Watches and Wonders. But all the other big ones are there. Rolex is there. Patek Philippe is there. You know, Alang and Zona is there. Even Grand Seiko is yeah. out there. It's not all Swiss and German manufacturers. So I actually took stock yesterday, and since Tuesday, which is when it started, I have put out 8 YouTube videos about watches that have been coming out. And then I do a Saturday live stream, which was about Watches and Wonders. And then Friday, you participated yep. with me and 3 other people on a panel, which I'll have a link in the show notes to that. If people, since it's got both of us on there, I'll go ahead and throw in the link about us talking about just thoughts on particular releases that people just felt like wanting to spend some time on. We took 90 minutes. The way it was flowing, there was so much discussion and debate, especially about some of Rolex's decisions, that I actually didn't pick any of the watches. I was just like, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to pick any myself so that I can just cycle through you other 4, because there's so much content and discussion. I'm like, let's just let you guys who aren't usually on go. And so that's why Saturday I just started pulling up stuff I wanted to talk about instead.
I had like 3 more watches picked out to talk about that we never got to.
But I was like, I had people that were like, we're not really going over 90 minutes, right, Dennett? Because sometimes I have a bad habit of saying, yeah, my time estimate on this is going to be 2 hours. And then 3 hours later.
Or more.
I'm not always good at estimating. So
I remember the one that started at 8 and we logged off at like almost midnight.
Yeah. So sometimes my estimates are bad. So I've tried to be better about it. And this one I kept deliberately free form. Didn't have people pre-send me their selections so that I could just say, well, all right, looks like we're going to have to cut it off here at 90 minutes in. But I did end us on time, so I was pleased with that. Speaking of being pleased, I think the listeners, as much as they enjoy hearing about nautical Victorian era ships and what weird, poor decisions Tudor made this year in the watch realm, I think they want to hear about pinball and video games. And as usual, we're going to start with pinball. And so we were just hot off the press. Tony just gave me the last updates for some elements of the pinball section that he wanted to talk about. But I'm going to start with something he didn't want to talk about. In fact, not that you had an opinion on it. I just didn't know anyone cared at all about Black Knight Sword of Rage, but apparently Stern is building more of them now for some reason.
They must have some orders have come in, enough that they want to put together a small stock to have set to the side. It's probably, did they announce that it was their final Sword of Rage run?
Not that I was aware of.
I would assume it's their final Sword of Rage run.
But I think I'm not surprised in and of itself. They did, not all that long ago, end up building a run of toppers for it, and it does have like one of the coolest toppers to ever be created. Valid. So I could see where that perhaps spurred enough interest to go ahead and want to. I just figured there were enough unwanted ones floating around used that if you bought a new topper, you'd just buy a used one. But I guess there was enough demand, so I was just a little surprised by it. What I wasn't surprised about is something we talked about last episode, Tony. And that was the rumored, now confirmed, Pinball Brothers release of ABBA Pinball. You know ABBA.
It'll do well in Europe.
That's what we were thinking, is it may do well. So I do have a link in the show notes to Pinball News. They have a detailed article about this game release. But in terms of some quick summary information, this game was designed by, and I'm going to apologize preemptively for mispronouncing names because I'm not familiar with most of these individuals. The game was designed by Alexander Spohr. Sound was done by, well, obviously it's got ABBA's music, but the sound design was done by Olaf Gustafsson. Video animation work was done by Kelly Mazeroski. And art was done by Andreas Benwick. There are 2 versions of the game. One is the Arrival limited edition. That's capped at a maximum of 500 units and is $10,000. And the other is the Voyage collector edition, which is capped at 300 units and is $11,000. So not a big price spread between the 2 models. In terms of some of the game features, this is true for both of the editions. It's three flipper game. It has a couple spinners. It's got the super spinner. It's got a disco spinner. It's got a couple controlled gates on it. It's got a 180 VUC, vertical up kicker. It's got a couple of three drop target banks. It's got another, I believe it's a separate VUC for the helicopter. And the helicopter blade is motorized. So it goes
VUC, yeah, it is.
I don't have to edit that because you were very careful. So good job. And so I've thrown in for our internal notes a picture of the layout so you can kind of see what it looks like. And then, of course, the Arrival edition is the one with the band in white outfits doing, I don't know, they're standing there. I don't like it. I'm just going to be really blunt. Like, I don't like that art package. The more limited version, the Voyage one, is a lot cooler with the heads looking like they were. You remember that Star Trek where God? What does God need with a starship? Yeah. That's what they look like.
What does God need with a starship?
That's what it's looking like. So this is a Star Trek. What is that, 5? This is a Star
Trek.
That
was 5.
This is a Star Trek 5 backlash. So, all right. We talked a little bit about the theme last time on our last episode. What do you think about what you've seen here? You mentioned again that you think it'll do well in Europe. I think it'll do all right.
It'll be fine. They're making a grand total of what, 800?
Yeah,
they will probably sell most of them.
Hmm. Yeah, pricing doesn't seem necessary for what you get. Doesn't seem necessarily ridiculous in today's market. The game, I like the playfield art just fine.
Yeah,
the toys and stuff look okay. The layout looks fairly accommodating in terms of, I think it's familiar enough that people won't. You remember playing Queen, and it didn't, like, half of it kind of felt fun and half of it was kind of meh. I think this is probably a little better overall, judging from the images.
Yeah, we'll just have to see. Maybe I'm just getting jaded. A lot of these music pens anymore feel like they're not going super insane fun. I can't think of the last time I found or played a music pen that really grabbed me as much as Metallica or AC/DC.
It's not just you. I don't feel an urge to play this.
Right. And I like ABBA.
Yeah, I do too. I look at it and I'm just like, if we see it at a show, we'll play it out of obligation.
Yeah.
But looking at it, nothing about it makes me want to play it. I see the disco ball and go, I have that in my Deadpool. I see the helicopter and I go, hey, I've played Raven before it had a helicopter. I see the symbol and I'm like, aw, that's something that Guns N' Roses did. It just feels like, it's like a magpie, you know, the bird. They've gone and just grabbed all these little bits of glitter from other successful pinball machines and dropped it into a very popular band. So I think because I'm going to lean towards what you've said, Tony, and say, given the European, just sheer popularity in the European market of ABBA, that they do go ahead and get over halfway on their unit count, the 800 unit count.
Yeah.
But I don't think they sell out of either edition, and hopefully it's enough of a success for them that they feel okay with it. But I don't, having not watched gameplay of this, I don't feel like saying anything further about it.
Right.
I don't know.
Because we just don't know.
Yeah. I don't feel anything when I look at it. But other than it was nice to remember Star Trek V, perhaps the worst Star Trek movie of the original cast. Would you this is a more interesting topic, and those that can't see, and you can't because you're not here, Tony's got the face, he's really putting in the thought. Am I saying this, is it really the worst one? I'll say
yes.
I think as a movie it is. It's not the most boring. Star Trek the motion picture is the most boring because nothing happens when they try and deal with Viger, but
as a movie, you're right.
But the Star Trek V with the Spock and the half-brother and the whole, the only the scene I like about it is the mountain climbing scene at the start. That's like the one thing I like about that movie.
I like,
because I like the boots, the flying boots.
I like when Scotty goes, I know this ship like the back of my hand, and turns around and walks into a stanchion and knocks himself unconscious.
It made me sad. Scotty's supposed to be brilliant. He's not. He's not the Gimli of Star Trek.
No, he's not. He's also the one who's still alive somehow in the Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it was covered in episode How, but
yes, very much so. Okay, that was a fun digression. The next thing, multimorphic. We already talked about Wuv. So Princess Bride. It was fun. We played it, at TPF. So Multimorphic has indicated they are actually planning to begin producing the Princess Bride module over this summer.
Okay.
So it, again, kind of like Final Resistance, it wasn't ready for shipping to the public as of the Texas show. It makes sense to get it at the Texas show.
It's still faster turnaround than Pulp Fiction or Cactus Canyon.
Absolutely. Revisited. Absolutely. We could go on and on about Chicago Gaming and their inability. Does it ever feel to you, Tony, like Chicago Gaming's kind of like, I'll feel like building the day.
Yeah.
I'll build when I want. I just build when I want. You'll wait. You know my quality.
People still buy. I mean, they do. That's the thing. It's pinball. Pinball people will still buy. You punch them in the face and they'll still, thank you so much.
But as another kind of aside, another digression, I've been reading online a number of people who Pulp Fiction was like one of the most darling games of Texas Pinball Festival 2023.
Right.
Now that it's getting out there, I've seen a lot of people that they're just like, the retroness of the game, it's not a keeper. Like they're not feeling like that it's going to last in the club. It's too basic.
You get the nostalgia hit from the initial play and then it's like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it's I don't think it's a particularly easy game. I remember when I played it, it totally kicked my butt, but it's just people are like, I don't know, when they're getting used to all the LCD screens and stuff and then seeing this very throwback style game and it's just not, it's like, okay. You got the sound package, but how much space do you want to give to a sound package?
I think we're starting to get into the point where the nostalgia for things is powerful, but the reality is not. It's just like the continuous clamor for, we need original themes. You don't have to have movies and stuff. You don't have to have licensed themes. Original themes don't sell. Nobody cares. It's been proven time and time again. They can kick out an amazing original theme and it won't sell half as much as a mediocre licensed theme. And it's the same thing with this nostalgia throw. Oh, all this stuff is all the fancy and the LCDs and I just want an old school game that kind of, you know what? Then buy an old game. Because more likely than not, what you get when you get a brand new game kicked out in the old style, this is where it's going to end up. It's going to end up with people going, well, that was interesting, and now I'm done with it. Unless you hit that magic point where it's one of those very rare games that just absolutely blows everybody's socks off.
Well, I think you have some good points, but let me spin it a little bit for you because I have a question on this. So obviously, we understand the idea of the nostalgia with the theme of a license that because it's built up this, you know, people love the show, people love the movie, people love the band and all of that. What about, though, applying that to concepts that people claim to have liked for pinball that never actually became commercially available pinball machines? And that's where DPX comes in, Tony. This is my last pinball topic for us. So we talked about DPX, which is the new sister company of Dutch Pinball, and how they're going to be doing these like smaller run, Cayenne collector style games, or that's the general vibe. Well, information has come out. There's already been a rumor going around that they have the rights to do J-Pop's Alice in Wonderland, the third planned game of the Zidware empire that never got much past sketches and foam core, but I believe did have a few payments come in. But separate from that, confirmation that I believe trademark filings have happened by DPX for them to do Magic Girl and Retro Atomic Zombie Adventureland, a.k.a. Raza, which we will call it Raza from here on out because I can't say that mouthful continuously. I will need more drinks. Tony, the nostalgia for the J-Pop's promises that were not kept. For those that don't know, as a brief recap, I already told you about Alice in Wonderland, but Magic Girl was a game that was the first game that was supposed to be built. He never built it as Zidware. And then the people who originally bought it, he was able to get American Pinball to bring him on to build a version of Houdini. Basically, he was given a bunch of parts to go ahead and make the Magic Girls. He did. It was a game that was essentially unplayable. My understanding is collectors and members of the community have gotten it to a quote-unquote playable state, but that it is in no way fun. And then Raza, as a concept, moved on to being over at Deep Root. They were going to do Raza, and I believe that was part of Robert Mueller's plan to make people whole by giving them Raza games. And while prototypes were made, it never got to the commercial state. It never went out. And while not universally agreed upon, whereas I think Magic Girl is universally agreed to be a terrible game, by and large, most people I have heard from who have played the prototype Raza said it was bad. Tony, how does this do? What do you think of this?
Shame.
Shame?
Shame. There are certain things that should just die. And these fall within that realm. These are games that have time and time again screwed the pinball public. People have put money into them. People have put hopes and dreams and thoughts, and they just keep getting hurt. I mean, this is one of those things that I feel like will never leave pinball. It's a bad penny that keeps turning up. It's a terrible thing that has... I do not understand how there is any draw for these games with their history. What part of this history makes you want to be involved in this game? What part of this their history would make you want to even think about giving your money to anybody for this? And I'm not just talking about pre-orders, because if you 100% honest, if you feel the need to put pre-order money down on one of these old Zidware titles, give it to the poor, give it to a charity, give it to me. I don't care. No matter where you get, you know what? Go out on the street, find the dirtiest drunk you can and give it to him. You're still doing a better thing than giving it to anybody willing to support this at this point. I mean, it's just terrible. I consider it a blight on pinball at this point. Not just that people are still trying to get these games made, but that people still think there's something special about this. I don't understand it. It is just a giant ball of sadness that has done nothing but hurt every single person who has gotten involved. How many times have these people thought that, oh, maybe they'll be made whole? How many times have people thought, well, maybe there's the chance for the thing that I got robbed of years ago? How many? No, let them die. It is over. We don't need them in pinball. I was so sad when I heard about this. I actually recorded 3 completely separate rants for the Instagram about this.
Really? I didn't know you had.
I haven't posted any of them, and I deleted them all because, I'll be frank, even for me being as open and truthful and 100% my thoughts on the Instagram as I tend to be, they were rough. They were... I wasn't nice.
Okay.
I was very, very not nice, to the point that when I rewatched them to decide if I was going to post them, on each one I was like, no, let's tone this down. No, let's tone this down. No, I just can't talk about this right now. That's how much of a rant I went on. This is nothing compared to what
right.
Well,
no, this is not a rant. This is you being direct.
But this is just, no, I don't, just stop. stop hurting people, stop doing this. And I don't know why anybody thinks these titles are worth their time, effort, or money, given their history. It doesn't matter how amazing they seem. Given the history that led to it, they are tainted. There's nothing good that can come from this at this point. They're tainted goods.
That's a good way to put it. The phrase I believe I used or similar on the pinball show for episode 150 that I do over with Zach is I talked about that, you know, that everyone on these will have to make a moral judgment, but that I morally could not buy these titles. To me, it would be inappropriate to buy these titles. And that's separate from the fact that DPX is, I feel, exceedingly arrogant to decide that this is an appropriate role for them, that they earned the right to do this because they spent 9 years making people whole on Big Lebowski. So now that they're such winners here, let's go ahead and let's turn out a bunch of Zidware stuff. Now, I don't buy into the superstition side where people are like, it's impossible to, and that's where the arrogance sort of comes in. I almost feel like there's this thought of these are games that are impossible for people to make. It'd be like, you know, you couldn't make Dune in the old days. It was too hard. Like that cinematic vision couldn't be done. We didn't have the technology and now we do. And so now Dune is awesome because we have the technology to do it. You know, the things that were unfilmable and these are unbuildable. They're not unbuildable. They're bad. Magic Girl wasn't a good game. Raza wasn't a good game. Alice in Wonderland, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably not a very good game. People fall in love with the artwork. And he didn't draw that stuff. Zombie Yeti did most of the artwork people love. And as I recall, Jeremy Packer, a.k.a. Zombie Yeti, doesn't want these projects to exist. He's like that part of his life is over and people still occasionally... And I don't like this. I understand why people do it, but I don't like it when people give J-Pop credit for discovering Zombie Yeti. You know, he was already an established artist. It's not like he found him out in the street begging for coffee and was like, let me turn you into a star. You're a star now. We could have found him just like Dirty Dottie was found. Like he was known for doing band posters and right. stuff. It's like it. So that part of the tale always kind of irks me a little bit because I think it's deeply unfair to Jeremy, but... Yeah, it is what it is. In this regard, the decision to go after this stuff seems incredibly tone deaf. DPX seems like, I'll see if you agree. DPX seems like the sort of company that would probably think, you know what? I bet the Trudeau guy probably has a few designs left in him. Let's bring him on board to come up with some new stuff once we get done with this, or bring him on board to fix this. I'm not saying I've read that they plan to do this. I'm saying that their view of pinball seems to make me think that would be okay.
Here's the thing. At this point, there's pinball people out there who would buy it. They'd buy it in a heartbeat.
Sure. Sure. I've thought that for years, that there's some that would just be like, as long as I get mine,
yeah,
I don't care about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
They show it all the time when they say things like, oh, well, I like this because it's entertaining to me, even though it's toxic and destructive to the rest of the hobby. And they use that to justify their support. And that slope slides all the way down.
It does. It is just it's terrible.
So I haven't decided yet whether I definitely would never buy any of these games. I have not fully decided yet if this would mean I would quote unquote blacklist DPX and refuse to buy anything they would ever put out. I lean that way personally. I've made that rule for myself about companies for arguably less than this. So anyway, I think it's tacky, tasteless, and I guess we'll see what ends up happening. But because a lot of it's going to come down on pricing and supply, because I understand the business angle. I think I do. And that is hey, there's money to be made. You really emphasized this, I think, on the last episode. There's money to be made at this top tier of people who want to just have the exclusivity. So if they're going to just turn out a few of these things, that's what Zidware tried to do.
Yeah.
Let's have these overpriced games, and you're going to pay overpriced, not because they're fun, but because they're limited. And we see that all the time. I mean, I see it in wristwatches. There are plenty of companies that use that as a strategy.
Yeah, we're going to turn out 100 of this thing, and they're going to be $1 million a pop.
It's like, it looks almost like the same thing as the regular base price, but you doubled the cost and you took an unlimited thing and said it's 100. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see it. And you know the quality is just the same. So all it is you're paying for the exclusivity.
Yep.
That's what this is. But anyway, that's all I had for pinball, Tony. What do you got over in video games? You got cheery stuff for us?
I have a mixture of entertaining and just terrible stuff. Okay.
This is a little bit of a downer episode. I think I'm going to name episode 217 downer.
Yeah, it's been kind of a downer couple weeks. So I don't even have a whole lot in video games. But I thought I'd open with something I thought was just humorous. The former Blizzard president, Mike Ybarra, put a post out on X that he thought that there should be an option at the end of single-player games, if you've really enjoyed it, to tip the developers, because the $70 you paid for that game isn't enough, so now you need to tip a game after you finish playing the game.
Well, I'll tell you what. As long as you use those self-checkout things, you can ask for that tip as much as you want. So just add that little thing where I have to fill out the little self-checkout thing at the end of the game, and then you can ask me, how much would you like to tip? 20%, 30%, 40%, or custom? I don't want to go on a rant about those things, but I'm getting really, really... I'm like every other American out there. I am so sick and tired of seeing that.
Oh, man. And if you've not done the math behind what their auto things are, you might want to do the math sometime. I saw one that popped up the other day where it's like, do you want to tip 15%? And when I did the math, it was 23%. Because I was like, that doesn't look like 15%. It was 23%.
Wow. Disgusting.
Oh, also, Mike. I'm not going to pay tips on the taxes. Just letting you know, I don't factor the taxes into my tip.
No, I don't either. They pay income taxes on it. It's not a salesable item, so why would you charge that? Anyway, okay, so Mike, you're being silly, Mike. Come on, don't be silly.
So he's got to do something. He said he's been playing a lot of single-player games, you know, since he's retired from Blizzard and just, like, enjoying retirement, I guess.
Okay.
I'm going to flip these around a little bit to also go with the interesting. We talked last year a couple of times about Sonic co-creator Yuji Naka.
Oh, his insider trading.
He has returned to social media with his very first social media post since he got arrested originally.
Mm.
And of course it's fun.
Does it say gotta go fast?
It doesn't say gotta go fast.
Does it say chili dogs?
It's in reference to the Dragon Quest series producer, Yumiaki, is no longer the producer for Dragon Quest. He has been moved to head the entire mobile division for them. But his post was, I hope he'll be gone soon because he's the kind of person who submitted a memo with lies, with evidence, to the court. Mm. So his first social media post was accusing somebody of lying to the court.
Ooh, perjury.
To get him in trouble.
Oh, it was all to get Yuji in trouble?
Well, I mean, that's the assumption. He's putting evidence into court.
False evidence. Lies. False evidence. Yes. Trixies. We swear it.
But he pled guilty to insider trading.
Because he tricks us. It freezes us.
It's like, yes, I did do the insider trading, but it wasn't necessarily as bad as you memo think
says,
it was.
Yeah. Liar memo. Okay, well, Yuji Naka, I think Yuji Naka is going to be a source for lots of material for us moving forward.
We'll see. He's out. I think he's finally, apparently he's out of jail now. Because he wasn't supposed to be in jail for 2.5 years, but he was apparently only in jail for a year. That or you get social media access in jail.
Maybe. That's just a good behavior. I've got a little secret. When you're in jail, it's usually pretty easy to not insider trade, except cigarettes.
Another interesting thing that popped up that I'm on the fence about this one is... Ubisoft has shut down the servers for the open world racing game, The Crew.
Okay, I've heard of The Crew. I've not played it,
though. Yeah, it's an open world racer, but even its single player option, because it's an always online game, has to be online. So when they shut the servers down, people were kind of hoping that somebody would, you know, create a workaround to have like pirate servers and stuff so they could still play or so that they could play single player. And Ubisoft instead decided what they were going to do was when they shut the servers down, they also rejected and invalidated everybody's license.
Oh, all the players' licenses?
All the players' licenses. Okay. So the people who already owned the game, like if you owned the game on Steam and you had it installed and you tried to boot it up to play it, it would pop up and tell you that you needed to put in your code to
like the game key,
to put in your game key.
Okay, I get your key
had been revoked.
Huh.
Or if you installed it in other locations, or if you had it installed on another system that I don't remember off the top of my head, when you booted it up, it would boot you to the demo, but it would then say the game is unavailable. So they just, when they shut it down, they shut it down hard.
Yeah, I don't know. I this is tough.
Right. See, this is where I was on this one. That's why I wasn't going to talk about this, but the more I thought about it, the more I'm thinking it's like, if it requires the servers, even for the single player, and you take the servers offline, then what is the point of letting people still have access to anything?
And then there isn't. This just doesn't seem like the right way to do it. Like, it feels like this makes it, I'm wondering if I'm being too sensitive on it. Like, to me, it's making it feel like you took away their buy. Like, you don't own the game anymore.
Yeah, and that's exactly how
it ends up feeling, which isn't true. But that being said, you can't play it anymore, and you don't want people to get confused and think that they're trying to, like, they're getting in and it's not. I mean, I guess my solution would be, could they not have a thing where if it tried to, I don't know, even if they shut the server down, can they not leave a server up that like just sends a message saying the game is now shut down or something?
Right.
And gives that, like they put out a patch and it lets people like it, because apparently it's too hard or not worth their time to patch it so that it just won't check the servers anymore or change it so that the single player would work. That's probably a lot of work is why. So just something that would instead, like in game, it would say the game server has been closed. The single player experience cannot be played without the servers. Thank you for your past support.
Yeah. And something like that would
be. But not like you need to input the game key. And then all this stuff's like saying it's, you need the game key. And it's like, but I have the game. I'm just wondering if it's like confused people after a couple of years who try and reconnect or something.
Right.
And I know this happened.
And it very well could. I
don't know.
I think the big thing here was, I think what they really were going for was they knew there were people who were looking to make like mods, especially for like, you know, Steam and the like, on the background that would let them generate private servers.
Right.
And they didn't want to allow that. Mm. And this 100% makes that a non-allowable thing.
True. Okay. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah. It's odd. So, and the last thing, cause like I said, I have very little this week. The last thing is Embracer Group has finished the restructuring.
Yeah.
They announced that as of March 31st, they were done restructuring. They're not selling anything else. So Gearsoft was the last sale, or Gearbox was the last sale. They're not selling anything else. During a talk with investors, they did say that they are not looking to begin mergers and acquisitions again at this point. Obviously, they're intending to continue forward with the developers they have, put out more new and higher quality games before they re-enter starting to pick up other places. They want to stabilize everything. So just for an overall look back, they've laid off more than 1,300 people, canceled dozens of games, closed several studios, and sold a whole bunch more. And now they're at the point where they're like, okay, we're finishing restructuring and we're ready to go forward as the new, slimmer, more agile Embracer Group. So okay. We'll see.
We will. They're not.
I give it 3 months before they start buying people.
Yeah. I mean, they've hinted at that they want to buy more stuff. I think them and Yuji Naka are going to be our two big things this year.
Yeah.
For fun stuff to talk about in video games.
Yeah, we're finally done with talking about the Blizzard Microsoft merger.
Yes.
We're done with all that other stuff. I think this is going to be the new reoccurring thing that has stuff that keeps coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is a short episode.
I'm checking right now to see if we had any interesting emails to our EGP email. We don't. So folks, if you want to reach out to us, give us interesting emails like you did on the last episode, you can email us eclecticgamerspodcast@gmail.com. We're also available at facebook.com/eclecticgamerspodcast. And if you want to support the show, you can for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/eclectic_gamers. Do not forget that if we get up to our 100 Patreon members, Tony and I are going to play some... What awful game did we say we were going to both play? I'd have to go back and listen. We'll play some awful game. We'll both play it.
We'll play an awful game.
Yes.
I don't remember what it was.
It was one where I wasn't sure we could actually play it co-op, but I figured we could just play it and record. It was something you brought up, but it was bad.
Whatever it was, it was bad. Yeah.
But
just remember, the Patreon is a much better use of your money than Magic Girl.
That's true. Don't give Raza. DPX your money. Give us your money instead. You know why? Because we aren't making promises about evil. We're not taking brokenhearted people and exploiting them for money. We do things like, here's a video about Dennis suffering through Gollum.
Right.
See, we are the ones who suffer, not you. That's the secret. Good point, Tony.
We're the ones that suffer. We're also available on Instagram as eclectic_gamers.
There might be a rant there. There might not. Tony uses his judgment to decide if it's too harsh.
That one was too harsh. I could not bring myself to post that one. Let's put it this way. If you're on our Discord, there is a moment, the spot on the Discord where that topic came up. And I referred to them as a specific STD of pinball. That is much nicer than what my rants were. So.
And the link to the Discord is in the show notes, so you can click and join through that. But until 2 weeks from now, my name is Dennis.
I'm Tony.
Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.